You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Ask Drone You as we bring you this week's drone news with the help of Haya Costello from Drone DJ. Haya, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good. Thank you, Paul. Good morning. How are you today?
Doing well, my friend. It has been a rough morning. I haven't had my triple shot of espresso. How are you?
Oh, so it's going to be a slow news show today then, huh?
Hopefully not too slow. Actually, there's a lot of exciting news, especially, you know, in the mapping industry, when it comes to the FAA. And again, drones are saving lives just one more time. There's so much going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on this week, but let's start off with the big announcement from DJI that was made yesterday, DJI Terra. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen that one, no?
I have seen. If you remember, we actually talked about DJI Terra back at Airworks last year because DJI Terra was kind of, it was teased at Airworks, and everyone is wondering, well, what does DJI have up its sleeve? Are they mapping the world? Are they going to become competition to Agisoft, Pix4D? What about Drone Deploy? What about all these other players in the ecosystem? So yeah, DJI Terra is something that's very interesting as DJI launches its own software to create a photogrammetric workflow for drone imagery.
Yeah, it is interesting for sure. I mean, we wrote about DJI Terra the first time back in November of 2017 when we found out that DJI had officially founded a company in the Netherlands and also registered the DJI Terra trademark. And that goes back to actually late in 2016. So DJI has been working on their new software for quite some time. And they say that their software will transform drone data into digital 3D models and maps for easy analysis and decision making. And I'm sure that will make a lot of alarm bells go off at competing companies such as Drone Deploy or Pix4D, perhaps. What do you think, Paul, the impact is going to be for the other guys in this area?
It's a great question, and I think it all comes down to what is the mode of delivery for this imagery and this processing, because there are a lot of players in the field that are operating a cloud-based system, and they're trying to create these all-in-one applications. Like I actually wrote in that article from last week talking about drone mapping, there are three different kinds of software. There's acquisition software that helps you acquire the right imagery in the right way. There's processing software, which is typically a desktop-based solution, and then there's the all-in-one. So like Drone Deploy is the all-in-one. And I honestly see DJI Terra as a competitor to people like Drone Deploy. The only thing is, I also see this as a competitor to people like UGCS. UGCS is one of the first mission planning applications where you can implement all different kinds of missions into one flight plan. So you can literally run your double grid and then go right into an orbit without wasting any battery whatsoever. It looks like DJI is adding this multi-flight functionality inside of their desktop-based app, which I think is a big deal because many users are used to utilizing their mobile phone or tablet for acquisition and or cloud upload. What I do like is that it is a desktop-based solution, which means the computing power and the variables that you have to control and processing will probably offer limitless or boundless opportunities. But without having played with the software myself, it's difficult to say with a high degree of certainty as to what the capability really is with this software, as its competitors to DJI Terra have really been perfecting their software for a long time. So it seems like DJI, which has been, you know, having a lot of issues with their Phantom series, launches this DJI Terra, which only works with the Phantom series. So I've been seeing a lot of comments in the community asking, well, hey, why is this?
Yeah, because on their website, they list the Phantom 4 Pro version 2, the Phantom 4 Pro Plus version 2, the Phantom 4 Pro and the Phantom 4 Advanced and the Phantom 4 Regular. The only one that is actually available right now on the DJI store is the Phantom 4 RTK. That's also, of course, compatible with this new software. All the other ones are either out of stock, they might or might not come back, some of them are even end-of-life products by now. So the real question also is, I think, what is DJI going to do going forward? Are any of these drones going to come back, or are we going to move forward and have a Phantom 5 not too long from now?
It is the question that everyone is asking. I've heard some people say, I'm waiting out to buy this new drone as my drones are reaching, their end of age. And I know other clients who are going out and buying as many Phantoms as possible, myself included, as we have been ramping up the number of training drones that we have here at DroneU. It's really interesting, Haya. There are a lot of questions about this software, right? It's desktop-based, but that means you're planning missions on your desktop and you're processing on your desktop. Typically, you're planning missions on an app through your phone that's controlling the drone. So that's a really interesting kind of change-up. There are so many questions here because as I've been going through the DJI Terra page, I notice things like annotations inside of their maps. I notice things like photo inspection, and I also notice things like linear and volumetric measurements. But when looking at the linear measurements, it's not clear how it's done. Now, with other softwares, you create manual tie points before you create linear measurements because you want to make sure that you're honing in on exactly that little tiny, maybe let's say down to a centimeter to measure from that point to another point. And if you've ever used a tape measure, you know how important it is to be extremely exact in which point you're measuring from. So there's a lot of questions here as far as the usability of this software. And again, without having access to it yet, it begs a lot of questions. Now, a lot of people are also asking, so what is it going to cost? And all I've heard, I don't know about you, are rumors that there are two pricing plans, and that is on the site, but the rumor is that the larger pricing plan, which does create 3D models instead of 2D maps, is going to be offered for around $3,000 a year. And frankly, I'm not sure if that's going to be a big enough difference in price point from the powerhouses like Pix4D that are known and trusted by surveyors, civil engineers, and other highly technical specialists.
How much of a price difference is there between Pix4D and the rumored price for DJI Terra?
I believe it's a $500 difference. You're looking at $250 a month with the DJI Terra. And you're looking, I just had this pulled up. I believe it's $350. Hold on one second.
So for commercial drone operators, the price difference is not going to be a reason for them to switch from one to the other, it sounds like.
Well, that could be yes and no. So if you buy an annual subscription to Pix4D, it's $292 a month. So you'd be saving approximately $42 per month when you buy DJI Terra versus Pix4D. Now, that being said, again, there's just a lot of questions as far as how much you can manipulate these maps and what power and control you do have. And again, without having access to it, it's hard to answer these questions. I've been calling all sorts of enterprise dealerships as they've been supposed to have the answers. And I've only been getting answers from one particular person who's had access to that software for quite some time. And again, I think that there is so many unknown variables. Now, here's the true question. If DJI Terra on their lower price point plan comes in at like $30 or $40 a month, it could actually cause a huge market disruption. But that has yet to be seen.
Well, I mean, two things, of course, that DJI is working in its, a couple of things actually, working in its advantage. I mean, one, it has deep pockets, so it can pursue something and see it all the way through to the end when it comes to things like software development. They have a massive user base of people using their drones, especially, of course, the Phantom 4 series. And also, they partner with Microsoft. So if they need to roll this out into a cloud application or bring it to mobile devices, they should be able to do that fairly smoothly, you would imagine, no?
Yes, I would imagine, but I would also counter your argument with DJI has been having significant financial issues, especially with the $150 million fraud and their slower sales growth in 2018. It showcases, and a question again has been asked in the community is, with all these problems with their main line of product, how are we expected to see a high quality product in a completely new avenue when their main source of revenue and name and reputation is at odds with the community?
Yeah, no, you're right. DJI's definitely had a rough year in 2018. What struck me at AirWorks in Dallas, Texas was the focus that DJI expressed on the enterprise drone market and how they've been going after that as well. So I guess in this case, we might see some startup issues here and there as they work out all the kinks when it comes to launching this software. But at the same time, I would imagine DJI is pretty serious about pursuing this. And if they're serious about something, then I think that's going to cause some issues for companies like Pix4D as well as drone deploy.
Yeah, it should be very interesting to see how this all shakes out. And it's also very interesting because it seems like the enterprise mapping industry has been absolutely inundated with solutions for mapping to solve minute nuances for different industries and verticals through drone mapping.
Yeah. Do you see yourself training people using DJI Terra down the road? Do you think that's that might happen, or is that too early to tell at this point?
I think it's too early to tell because it, you know, DroneU is focused on providing a comprehensive solution for training, especially when it comes to drone mapping, which drone mapping literally has hundreds of verticals inside of the industry itself. So with our classes, you have to learn an extreme amount of detail, and every single piece of information builds upon itself. So if you don't have the same customization and variable control that you do in, say, something like PIX4D, which is the industry standard, if we don't have that control, the answer is probably no.
Yeah. So there's a little to be seen before you would make such a decision, it sounds like.
Definitely, I would wait to be seen. Also, I want to hear what the professionals in the industry, the high-ranking super specialists, you know, the surveyors, are they going to look at DJI Terra and see if it's a solution? Because oftentimes, you know, a lot of people have always been asking me, you know, Paul, why is PIX4D the solution? Well, first of all, there's been a lot of research about the accuracy of PIX4D over all of its competitors, which it has shined through over and over again for being more consistent and more accurate. But on top of that, PIX4D offers so much customization and flexibility. You can output all different kinds of files in all different kinds of ways. If you can't do that with Terra, I don't really see its viability.
Yeah. It's too bad that we haven't been able to really talk to any professional or commercial drone operators that actually had some hands-on experience, I guess, with DJI Terra to get their initial feedback. I mean, DJI obviously been working on this for a number of years now. I think the interesting thing is to be able to get to talk to some of those guys who actually used it in the field and get their feedback and some of their experiences back.
Yeah, the rumors on the street are saying that only one particular individual had access to this program. And I would really like to see, again, some industry professionals. Yeah. I'm not really concerned with what some drone pilots think about this mapping software, as I'm really more focused on the technical details and aspects of this software and its capabilities. And I'd love to hear that from more technical operators, not a bunch of sales guys.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Let's move on to your article of today, right? The FAA enacts the new enforcement actions against drone pilots. What's going on there, Paul?
Yeah, so this was actually brought to my attention. It was kind of swept under the rug in the commercial SUAS group. And essentially in February of this year, the FAA came out with new standards and protocols for FISDO, or Flight Standards District Offices, which is essentially the investigative arm of the Federal Aviation Administration. And what they're saying is they want to increase essentially surveillance in areas that are prone to have erroneous drone flights or illegal drone flights, essentially saying that if you see five reports of illegal drone flights within Bravo, Charlie, Delta, or Echo airspace, that FISDO should be spending time, and it's actually a requirement in their new action plan to surveil those areas. Now, it's really interesting because if you remember our podcast last year, we were wondering how many enforcement actions has the FAA actually taken against drone pilots? And will this new protocol that the FAA just released, will that increase enforcement? Well, thanks to a good friend named Tom, we got a new FOIA request back and found that there have actually been zero, and I mean zero, enforcement actions between 2018 and 2019. All enforcement actions ended up equating to a warning notice. Now, this compliance philosophy has pros and cons, Haya, because compliance philosophy essentially says, if you see an illegal drone pilot and you report it to the FAA, yeah, they're going to get a slap on the wrist. Yes, they're going to be scared to death, but nothing's going to happen as long as they agree to change their ways. If that drone pilot argues, acts aggressive or outlandish to these federal investigators, that's essentially when they decide to slap the financial consequences on these pilots.
So you're saying that as long as somebody's reasonable and friendly and polite, what, they're off the hook?
I would say that I think the historical evidence showcases that, and you can see those enforcement actions on your site on Drone DJ.
It's crazy though, right?
It is crazy. Again, pros and cons to this whole surveillance. And I think it's something where, you know, community policing is something that, you know, police officers try to do to build relationships in the community and build trust. And I think that that's something that really helps people out, especially smaller communities. Now, with this compliance philosophy and this new surveillance, the FAA is essentially pushing investigators to go out and go talk with more drone pilots. Frankly, I see this as a good thing for someone who follows the rules. Now, when looking at the investigator checklist, though, there were some questions that I was like, well, hey, wait a minute, this isn't in the law. So I reached out to a couple of federal investigators and asked them, hey, how does this checklist pan out against the law? So I just had some clarification questions and waiting to hear back on that, and we'll report back to you when we have that information.
Now, I noticed in the article, the documents, the checklist that you linked to, that was already put together back in September of 2018. Why is it that we are only learning about this now?
Well, because typically in order to have access to that particular link, you have to be a federal investigator or know where to go. But because that document was linked in the new, I think it was the FAA 8900 dot, I forget the name of the document. It was linked in the master document. So essentially giving access for everyone to see that. So the order was notice 8900.504 and its effective date was February 28th. And in that document, it actually links the
Checklist.
The checklist, yes.
There you go. So we finally are able to discover that and share that with all our listeners and readers.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see the checklist, but it also goes to show that there's always room for interpretation on that checklist. So it's one of the things that I'd really like to get clarified.
Yeah. All right. So this is something we're definitely going to get back to once we get some more answers. We'll either post a new article or add to the existing one. And I guess also probably cover this in one of the upcoming news shows.
I actually just got a response literally 10 seconds ago, if you'd like me to read it.
Dig in.
Okay, so I got an email back from this federal investigator, and I asked very specifically about maintenance records, because in the investigative checklist, pilots are quote-unquote asked, and this is what it says, inspectors should request that the operator present maintenance records, if applicable, for review. And I asked the federal investigator, if I understand 14 CFR 107 correctly, maintenance records are recommended, but they're not required. And I said, you know, I think this could be a point of confusion for some FISDO operators who may not be familiar with 107. And he said, your statement on surveillance is absolutely correct. We will not be hunting down drone operators or have anyone signaled out to look at. Your question on maintenance records is as perceived. Maintenance records would only be required to operators that have an operating manual that states maintenance records are to be maintained, which if I understand DJI's operating manual, it's not in there. Now, I could be wrong about that, as many manuals have come out since the last one that I've read, but I haven't seen that to this date. They also say the operators will not be judged unless they do have this manual and is not regulatory required. So
work in progress, it sounds like.
Work in progress, but again,
a good step in the right direction.
I do think it's a step in the right direction. Yeah. I don't think that drone pilots should be nervous about being surveilled by the FAA. As long as they're acting in the way that they should, they're going to be fine.
Yeah, they should be. They should be.
So what else? So what else do you have in drone news this week? I know that there is some good news out there.
Yeah.
And I also noticed that there is a huge shift going on in the marketplace. What do you have for us?
Yeah, let's start with the good news first. I mean, we're always looking for examples where drones actually make a difference for the better. And of course, this week, again, there was another example where a drone played a somewhat crucial role in the rescue of 7 swimmers. And this happened quite far away from where we are here in the US. This was in Micronesia, in Laulau Bay, if I pronounce that correctly. What happened was there was a group of 8 people swimming, and as the tide went out, they got kind of sucked out into the ocean further and further. And among these 8 tourists, there was only one good enough swimmer to actually make it back to shore. He then placed a 911 call for help and support. And one of the police officers that got involved in the rescue launched his drone, and that was, I believe, a DJI Mavic 2 Pro, flew it out to where the swimmers are, got the coordinates and then radioed the coordinates to the guy on a boat who was on his way to rescue these swimmers. So the drone assisted in that sense that it was able to get the boat to the swimmers directly, don't waste any time, and bring these people back safely to shore. And what I was able to find online is that none of them incurred any injuries. So everybody was safe and sound back ashore, and the drone played a role in this rescue, which is good.
That is fantastic news. That really is fantastic news. It makes me wonder, too, if drones like the Urban Drone Splash Drone, which can carry a life preserver underneath it and it has a radio-controlled drop mechanism, it makes me wonder if something like that would be really useful in that instance where the boat wouldn't be needed.
Possibly. I mean, we've seen examples where drones would carry flotation devices and drop them next to swimmers. I think in this case, when there are seven swimmers involved, you would have to have access to a number of drones. I don't think in this case they had drones available with flotation devices, but they were able to do the next best thing, of course, which radio the coordinates of the exact location of these people in trouble to the guys on the boat who were then able to rescue them. So we've seen over the last, year, 2 years, we've seen a lot of different cases in which drones were used for search and rescue. Sometimes they were just used to find the people. Sometimes they were used to actually drop flotation devices as well. And I think many people are experimenting with drones and see how we can best use them to save people. This is definitely a case where a drone proved its point.
That is fantastic. I love hearing how drones are doing good. It is something that is truly powerful, and it is something that I absolutely love hearing. But it also seems like as drones are saving lives, they may be saving lives on a macro scale and even on the food that we eat. What do you have for us?
Yeah, this is agriculture. Apparently DJI, and this is mostly taking place in China for now, but apparently DJI is shifting its focus away from consumer drones towards the use of drones in the agricultural business. There was an article in the Financial Times this week that mentioned that DJI was spending more time, more money, and more energy in promoting drones for farmers in China. And it mentions here that DJI sold 20,000 agricultural drones for spraying pesticides in China last year, and about 2,000 in Japan and South Korea. So this is not so much happening in, let's say, Canada or Europe or the US. It's further east. But it's an interesting sign that DJI is focusing on the commercial drone market or the enterprise drone markets so much. I mean, we've seen here in the US that the consumer drone market has slowed down somewhat. And maybe this is DJI's reaction to that shift in the market, that they're focusing their time and energy on a different area.
Well, I think this is extremely exciting for agribotists across the world because drones significantly limit overspray and they significantly limit, where essentially these pesticides and herbicides can go that they shouldn't go. They also create a much more effective spraying pattern with the prop wash from the drone versus other traditional methods of spraying agriculture. The only hiccup is here in America, where most drone pilots need a Part 137 certificate in order to actually spray in the United States. I'm hoping that that law gets changed here soon, as I've found from one recent Drone U member, Mr. Philip Shaner, how difficult that process has been, but how he is now able to spray crops. So congratulations, Mr. Shaner. And also want to say that it's something that I think could have a massive effect on the population as a whole, as we are seeing more and more reports of glyphosate in a lot of American foods, drones in agriculture could be a massive solution to that problem if glyphosate is removed and pesticides and herbicides are sprayed more effectively, causing a healthier population overall.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot, though. I mean, if you look at areas where drones are being used in very new and innovative ways, we've seen that happen in Asian countries. We've seen that happen in Africa as well. And typically, these countries are less strict when it comes to the commercial use of drones, and their rules and regulations are less strict than they are in Europe and Canada and the US. For instance, also, Google was doing their tests in Australia for deliveries by drone. Of course, we've seen Zipline working in African countries as well to make deliveries by drone. So a lot of these developments and innovations are taking place not as much inside the US, but typically in countries where the rules and regulations are a little bit less strictly enforced than they are here.
It is very interesting too, because UPS just came out with their quote unquote first successful for-hire drone delivery. And while, again, that's completely illegal under Part 107, it seems like a lot of American companies are side-skirting the FAA's rules by self-certifying their aircraft as air carriers under Part 135. I know this is something that Amazon did, and frankly, I thought Amazon would be the first to the market, but UPS has officially raced ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it's going to be interesting where that's going to go. I mean, a lot of big name companies are out there trying to figure out how they can use drones to make deliveries. We know from tests that took place in Switzerland that especially when it comes to last mile deliveries, that drones are much more environmentally friendly and a lot more effective when it comes to delivering smaller parcels in that last mile delivery. I mean, comparing that to a diesel truck being stuck in downtown traffic, you can see why a drone would have a benefit. Of course, there are many regulatory hurdles since you can't just fly a drone in a city just yet. But who knows?
Should be interesting to see how it all unravels, Haya. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show and going over the good news, the bad news, and the new competitors to the market.
Thanks, thanks for having me. As always, it's a pleasure to be on the show, man.
It's a pleasure to chat with you, as always, and I greatly appreciate it and look forward to hearing what we have for next week. But Haya, until next time, thanks again for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for us today. If you want to subscribe or leave us a review, please do so on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Thanks again for watching another fantastic episode of Ask Drone U.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.